So today for Bible study, we're going to continue some thoughts about in the fullness of time. And in the fullness of time, and we talked about that in a sermon. And we're going to look at some further thoughts in light of the Roman Empire. And as you think about God and his kingdom and his way of life, it may be hard to conceive of the Roman Empire being aligned with God, but interestingly, certain things took place in regard to the Roman Empire that allowed Christ and the work of God to go forward. And I thought that we would examine that. And we will also look at one subject that is very much tied in with the Roman Empire. And you wouldn't really think of it, but we'll examine it at the end of the study here this evening. So to begin with, we're going to look at the political background of the Gospels, which involves the Roman Empire and some of the other things that went along with the Roman Empire and the political situation in Judea. So we'll take a look at those things, and I hope you'll be able to see how this is all part of the God fulfilling his plan and very much fits in with the idea of fullness of time. So again, let's look at the scripture in Galatians chapter 4, verses 4 and 5, where it says, "But when the fullness of the time had come, God sent forth his son, born of a woman, born under the law, to redeem those who were under the law, that we might receive the adoption as sons." So as you think about the fullness of time, had come. And obviously, it was talking about the time for prophecies of the birth of the Messiah to be fulfilled. But I want to look at this from a little bit different angle, as I said, bringing into play the Roman Empire. So we look at the Roman Empire at its greatest extent. The Roman Empire was an amazing governmental structure that reigned over all of these different places in going all the way to the west and into Britain and Spain and into Africa and all the way over to the east into the area that goes into Media and over to the east. It was an amazing empire, and it's the standard by which man wants to rebuild other empires. So those empires have been developed over the years, and the standard is the Roman Empire. So so we're going to take a look at that. And as you look at this picture of the Roman Empire, the Roman Empire actually allowed the gospel to be spread during that time. Consider, for example, that what would the conditions would have been had Jesus been born, say, 100 years earlier. What would it have been like if it had been 100 years earlier? Had Jesus begun his ministry 100 years earlier, Judea was in great turmoil because Rome was trying to consolidate its hold over Asia Minor and the Eastern Mediterranean. So the area was in conflict. It was in turmoil. And if Jesus had been born in that particular time, then it would have limited the opportunity for him to do his work and to prepare the disciples to be able to carry on the gospel. As you think about this 100 years later, what would it have been like? Well, if you go 100 years beyond when Christ was born, the Jews were in open rebellion against Rome. And so they destroyed the city in 70 AD, but they allowed the Jews to remain. And then in 135 AD, the Jews rebelled again, and they said, "You can't live in this area." And they basically drove them out because of the difficulties that they had caused. So as you think about the fullness of time, it would have been impossible for an organized church to begin and for the gospel to have been effectively spread if Rome had not been on the scene. So God can use different empires, and he has used different empires and different structures in order to accomplish his great purpose. It's not that they were godly in every way, but God was able to make use of them to accomplish his purpose. So Rome was special in the sense that something special happened in Rome around the time of Christ's birth, and that was the Pax Romana. And the Pax Romana is the peace of Rome, and it was a special time in the history of the world, and it was very important to the founding of God's church and Jesus Christ coming on the scene and doing his work. And the Pax Romana, we'll look at why it was such a special time and why it was so important to the church. And it's called, you know, you could call it the Peace of Rome, Pax meaning peace, and it was a Roman peace or the Peace of Rome. So when you look at the Peace of Rome, it's something that, as you think about our time, and you look at, for instance, Afghanistan, Afghanistan throughout history has just been a complete mess. I mean, it's always been in conflict, the various tribes fighting each other, and, you know, they've been ungovernable. The Russians tried it, and they weren't able to rule the Afghanistan, and then we've tried it, and we're just basically struggling. We've not conquered the whole nation, and as soon as we pull out, it's going to go right back to the same chaotic situation. So without a strong central government to maintain peace and order in Afghanistan today, it's every man for himself. And there are other places in our world where that's the that's the case. So, and as you look at the Middle East, for example, it's been the case for sure. And things are changing in the Middle East as the United States pulls back. And it's sadly probably going to go back to the chaotic state that it's been in for centuries. So we see Roman soldiers here. And as you look at the Roman soldiers and think about them, as you look at what they were, the Roman army basically pacified the area that we looked at on the map. The Roman army conquered. They came out of Rome. They expanded their empire, and their goal was commerce. And they began to expand throughout the Mediterranean. Their chief rival to begin with was the kingdom to the south that was led by Hannibal, and they defeated Hannibal, and Carthage, destroyed Carthage so that it would never rise again, and that allowed them to continue to expand. And so they expanded north, south, east, and west, and they were pretty much, they were organized and the greatest military force of the time, and spread their empire far and wide. As you look at this next slide, it's interesting because the next slide is a picture of prosperity. And that's what the Roman peace was all about. So you have a goddess here, and you have children, and you have all of the abundance that you can see here, all of the crops, and these other gods and goddesses that were helping, and you had the abundance of cattle. So the Roman peace allowed for people to prosper. Yes, the Romans were tough to deal with, but they did a lot of it allowed people to prosper, people to run businesses, people to be safe. And they did a lot of things that made the world at that time expand and grow and have opportunities they wouldn't have otherwise. And if you look at the fall of Rome and what followed the fall of Rome, it was a devastating occurrence. When the Rome fell, it basically, everything collapsed. And people were so used to Rome and its ways that when it collapsed, they had nothing to fall back on. And so you went into the Dark Ages, and it took quite a while for mankind to come out of the darkness and to be able to reclaim knowledge and reclaim organization and all of that. Basically, it was all lost, and it was a very difficult time for mankind. Let's go forward here, and we see something, a freeway. I'm not sure exactly which city this is, but all of these people are coming into the city, going out of the city or coming into the city, and this is an interstate. And as you look at the Roman Empire, what happened was it opened the way for people to travel, to be able to travel, and the Romans decided we need roads to be able to move our troops around freely and quickly. And so they built this whole setup of roads, and you might call it the interstate system of the ancient world. And they set that up so their troops could get around quickly, they could move supplies quickly, and wherever they needed troops, they could get them there with easy, and because of the roads. And the Romans became very effective at building roads all over the Mediterranean area. And you still see remnants of those roads around the Mediterranean. I mean, you look at their bridges. Their bridges were so well built that some of them are still in use to this day. So it's like in our country, we decided that we needed an interstate system. And if you ever try to drive from California to the East Coast, which we did, it was an ordeal to drive on highway Route 66 and two-lane highways. It took forever. But once you got the interstate system in, it just allowed for travel to go much faster. And that's what the Romans were able to establish, was an interstate system that allowed swifter travel, that allowed the Roman troops to move around quickly, to allow commerce to be spread between one city and one area after another. So it really was a great improvement in the world. And those roads are quite amazing. As you look at the next slide, you see a city here where you can see the ruts in the road here. These are chariot road ruts, and they travel these roads so frequently in this city that you've got ruts that were there. We went to the city Pompeii, and you could see the very same thing. You could see the roads, and yes, they're more or less like this, which looks rough, but you know, they were able to drive their chariots and travel around quite well as a result of the building of the roads. So the roads allowed for the Roman military to move around quickly when needed. It allowed for people to travel relatively safely and quickly throughout the empire. And this particular slide here is of Ephesus. And you can see that it was we don't see it in its prime, but it was a wonderfully made road. And then we have another slide of a road. I mean, we look at it and we think, well, this was, it looks awfully narrow, but I'm sure a chariot could easily fit through there. A man could walk or ride a horse or donkey. It was quite effective as a means of conducive to travel. So the Roman road system was one of the great things that helped the work of God to go forward. Because you think about all of the travel that the Apostle Paul and the other apostles undertook, they went all over the known world, carrying the gospel to different places, and the roads allowed them to travel more or less safely and quickly, and to be able to go from one city or one town to the other. So they were a great blessing, and these only came about once you had the Roman Empire established. And the Roman Empire in its fullness was able to accomplish these things, which all converged at the point where it allowed all of the commerce and good things to come from the road system. So you not only had the roads that were developed, but you go to another thing that developed during this time was came together under the Pax Romana was the ocean-going travel. So you have this mosaic of a ship, and these ships were able to travel all around the Mediterranean and to carry cargo and passengers, and it was another means by which the gospel could be preached to the world. And there was a time when that was not the case. And you had the pirates that were impacting the Roman world. The Mediterranean Sea was full of pirates. They were attacking shipping. They were confiscating cargo and taking people prisoners and hostages, and all of that was going on. And finally, the Romans said, okay, enough of this. And when they began to, the pirates were attacking the Italy and Rome itself. So they said, okay, we can't allow this to go on. So what they did was the Senate authorized a man named Pompey to gather a force, a huge army, in order to get rid of the pirates. So what Pompey did is he went out and he began to take an organized approach to destroying the pirates and setting up a completely different system. So what he did is that as he would defeat the pirates in one area, then he would establish a place that would be overseen by one of his commanders, and they would be given troops, and they would be given ships, and it was their job to keep the pirates out. And then once they got that established, then they would move on to another area. And he set up 55 different states where they could properly oversee the Mediterranean Sea. And eventually they drove the pirates out. And they were able to clear the sea and set up something that was going to work and allow for commerce. This happens to be the Romans attacking the pirates and battling them, and this was all carried out, and they set up 55, as I said, 55 different districts, and where the pirates had been cleaned out. So you had the and this is just one battle that was taking place near the area of Cilicia. Where Paul was from, and you had pirates in that area, and the Romans were fighting with them, and it was a monumental battle that allowed, basically brought the pirates to an end. So, you know, pirates can wreak havoc. That's, if you go back in America's history, you had the Barbary pirates, and you couldn't negotiate with them, you couldn't do anything with them other than defeat them, and eventually they were able to do so, and the pirates sued for peace and brought peace to and commerce to the area there. So this was another thing that took place. And as you look at the history of shipping and ships in the Mediterranean, you have Paul traveling by ship multiple times. You had others traveling by ship in order to get from one location to the other. The shipping had become so reliable that Paul wanted to get from Western Asia Minor down to Jerusalem by a certain holy day. So he was able to do that, and the shipping was reliable, and he was able to travel from, I think it was Milesia, over to the city of Jerusalem in order to be there by Pentecost. So Paul was able to make use of it, and it was just one of the things that was available to him and to the other apostles as needed. And it was something that came to pass as the Pax Romana was established, and it was a great blessing to not only the people of God, but it was a blessing to the people of the Mediterranean. It just made life safer for everyone. Now, as you look at this map of the Roman Empire, as I said, you see Paul regularly catching rides on commercial cargo ships, and there was a great deal of commercial activity all over the Mediterranean Sea, and it really took off as the pirates were cleared out and it was easier to travel. Now, another thing that was a blessing during the time of the Pax Romana was the mail system. So we basically take the mail for granted, but it was something that was very much needed in Paul's time. And the Romans set up a system that worked quite well. And it's one of the main reasons why we have the New Testament today. There was a mail system that allowed people in one place to send letters to people in other places. And we don't know much about it. And clearly, in some cases, personal messengers took letters back and forth. But clearly, Paul used letters to regularly communicate with people in the church, to communicate things that they needed to be aware of and that he wanted to share with them. And it's because of this that we have a New Testament today. In some cases, he sent letters all the way from Rome to people like Timothy or some of the churches in Asia Minor. So they were able to set up a mail system that served the Roman Empire well. And the people of the church were able to take advantage of this opportunity. They were able to make use of the mail system. I mean, look at the Church of God. The Church of God has greatly been blessed by the mail system that has existed here, sending out millions and millions of pieces of literature over the years. And, you know, from Pasadena out to the world. And so we've been blessed in carrying out the gospel, sharing the gospel, because of the mail system that exists. And so we've made it work, and they were able to make it work in their time and share the truths of the Bible with the various congregations in that time. Now, we're going to take a little historical tour here. When you look at Jerusalem fell to the Babylonians in 604 BC, they fell to Nebuchadnezzar and his army, and those who survived were carried away captive to Babylon. And so they moved to Babylon, and when they were in Babylon, they were able to take up life again, but they were forced to leave their home. Jerusalem was basically a mess, and there was it was a shambles when they came back 70 years later. But Jerusalem fell, and Israel and the people of Judah were carried to Babylon. So Babylon continued and led by Babylonian rulers until 539 BC, when the Persians under Cyrus conquered the city of Babylon. So they conquered the city, and the people of Judah had been residents there for quite a long time. And as Cyrus took his position as ruler over Babylon, he issued a decree. And that decree allowed for those Jews who wanted to return to the land of Palestine, or to the land, the promised land, and return to Jerusalem, they were able to do so. So he issued that decree, and those Jews who wanted to return were able to do so, with support of the king of Persia. But what was also happening here is it loosened the grip of the Babylonian. You know, once the Babylon fell, then people were able to move about more freely. So as you look at the history of returning to the promised land, only a very small portion of the people that were actually in Babylon returned. A lot of the people either stayed in Babylon or they moved in different directions. They could move eastward toward India and areas out in that direction. They could move westward over into Asia Minor and on beyond Asia Minor into Greece and Rome. They were able to spread out. So you find the Jews spreading out all over the known world at the time. And this may seem like it's unimportant, but when you look later on, you have the fact that because of them spreading out, these were the Jews spread out, and they were Greek-speaking Jews. The Greeks had conquered most of the known world, and they had done their best to spread the Greek language and literature and all of that. And the Jews had been impacted by that, and they were able to they learned Greek, they were able to read Greek, they were able to understand Greek, and Greek basically became the lingua franca of the ancient world. So you could go almost anywhere in the ancient world, and most of the people could understand Greek. So they didn't understand Latin. They may have their own local tongue, but many times they were able to speak Greek. And this was very important for the work of God going forward. Because if you had not had the Greek language and literature and all of that spread around the Mediterranean area, it would have been almost impossible for the church to go forward and preach the gospel and be understood, because you'd have to learn every individual language, which would have been a great task. And so because of the impact of the Greeks, the Greek language and literature, and its spread throughout the Mediterranean, you know, even when you were in a Roman colony, for instance, they could understand Greek. You could communicate. And this is a slab with a Greek epitaph of Maria, and you see the Jewish symbols. So these were symbols, and this is from the 4th century AD, but this was commonplace, the Greek language, and it spread throughout the Mediterranean world. As you look at this here, you see this is a copy of Romans 15, verses 11 through 19 on a papyrus. It's very neatly done. This is from around 200 AD. And the Greek language was something that was widespread, and it was a great blessing to the world at the time. And you go back earlier, you let's just finish this idea here. Let's just go back. So when you look at the Greek language, one of the blessings that took place was that they wrote, they translated the Bible around 132. Into Greek. It's known as the Septuagint Bible, and it was widely dispersed, and people in the synagogues may have had copies of the Hebrew scriptures in Hebrew, but most of them had copies of it in Greek. As you think about the New Testament, it was written and preserved in Greek, as I said, the Septuagint. It was the commonly understood language of the time. And interestingly, why would God choose to write the scriptures in Greek? Why would he focus on that language? Well, the reason is Greek is a highly specific language capable of expressing complex theological concepts and issues. For instance, things like the Logos, and then salvation and grace and all of those words that we're familiar with, but because they were written in Greek, they were able to be brought out and expanded upon. Had there not been a universal language in use throughout the Roman Empire, it would have been much more difficult to spread the gospel. But because there was that universal language, they were able to spread the gospel. So the common use of Greek language was another important factor of the Pax Romana. So as we go forward here, another thing is, as these maps illustrate, is as you had the people of Judah carried away captive to Babylonia, one of the thing, as I said, they began to spread out, especially after the time of Cyrus the Great and the Persians. So they began to spread out, and one of the things that they set up was the synagogue system. So wherever you had a certain number of Jewish men, then you could establish a synagogue in that place. And so you had synagogues spread all over the Mediterranean area, and this was instrumental to Paul and Peter and others of the apostles communicating the gospel to those people. Because as you think about, you know, you see all of these different cities, most of them had synagogues in them. Antioch, Cilicia, that's where Paul was from. You have Phrygia, Iconium, all of these places had synagogues, and every one of them was a door through which Paul or the other evangelists could go and share the gospel with the people there. So they would be able to come into the city, and they would be able to share the gospel with the people living in that city. So as Paul would come into a city, where was the first place he would go? He would go to the synagogue. For instance, in Acts chapter 13, verse 14. Acts chapter 13, verse 14. It's interesting what it says here. It says, "But when they departed from Perga, they came to Antioch in Pisidia." And this is Antioch, this is Pisidia, and you have Antioch here, not the Antioch down here in Syria. So they came to the city and went into the synagogue on the Sabbath day, and sat down. And after the reading of the law and the prophets, which were done every Sabbath, they read certain portions of the law and prophets. The rulers of the synagogue sent to them, saying, "Men and brethren, if you have any word of exhortation for the people, say on." So then Paul said, "Sure, I'll say on." So he stood up and he began to share the truths about the Christ and the gospel with the people there, to be able to refer to the Hebrew scriptures and bring out the points to the people there. And he used the Hebrew scriptures, but he used the Septuagint translation in order to communicate with them and shared God's truths with them. So the synagogues had been set up in the Jewish dispersion, and they were places where the apostles could go and share the gospel and prepare and help the people to come to know the truths that are essential to eternal life. So another thing that was important to the preaching of the gospel was the Roman approach toward other religions. So as you note here, this jackal is an Egyptian god. But you notice the attire of the jackal. The attire is Roman. So you had a mixing between Egyptian, this is an Egyptian god, and the Roman. And so you had, this was a common thing that we find at this during this time of the Pax Romana. And it and the Romans were not really persnickety about your religion as long as you weren't causing problems. And as you see here, the Romans even incorporated some of those religious practices and took them back to Rome, which they've done here with Anubis. So you have this jackal-headed god in Roman attire, and the way the Romans looked at Judaism, they had not persecuted the Jews. They tolerated the Jews, so the Jews were free to practice their religion. And as Christianity developed, they just saw Christianity as a sect of the Jews, and they did not persecute Christianity. And so the Christians were able to operate freely under the Romans, and it allowed the Jews to continue their religion, and it allowed the Christians to be able to practice their religion. So Judaism and early Christianity were basically seen as the same thing by the Romans, and they were not persecuted, and it allowed the church to gain a foothold. So you didn't have an effort to stamp out this new sect of Judaism, and so the church was established and spread, and the Roman peace and the conditions of religious tolerance allowed that to happen. As you think about the Roman peace, you had two Roman emperors that were very important to this. One of them was known as Augustus or Octavius, and he is known as Caesar Augustus or Augustus Caesar, and he was related to Julius Caesar, and he was the Roman ruler from 27 BC to AD 14. And it was Caesar Augustus who called for the census or registration that we read about in Luke chapter 2. And that is why Mary and Joseph were commanded to go down to Bethlehem, because that was their hometown. So they went back there, and and that's where Jesus was born. There were different ideas about how Rome should be ruled, but under Augustus, the power of the imperial state was thoroughly established, and the emperor became supreme, and everybody was answerable to him. The power of the Senate was diminished, and the emperor ruled. And Augustus was a fairly benign emperor in comparison to rulers that followed him, like Nero and Caligula, who were basically madmen and caused a lot of havoc in the Roman Empire. Interestingly, the next picture is of someone that predated Octavius or Augustus by about 300 years, and this is a mosaic of Alexander the Great. And Alexander the Great and his conquest had a great impact on the world because he spread the Greek language, and his impact lasted for quite some time. But anyway, one of the things that Alexander the Great implemented was when his soldiers were done soldiering or they were retiring, what he did was to allow them to be able to establish colonies, to be able to be granted land and rights in the various parts of the empire. So that's something that Alexander implemented, and Augustus learned that from him, and he did the same thing in his empire. So when you had a military man retire, he gave the man an incentive, such as free land or a kind of monetary help to encourage them to go to certain parts of the empire and retire there and take up residence there. And the purpose of this was to establish a Roman colony, and these soldiers were going to influence the area in which they lived. They were part of the community. They became leaders in the community. They were there in the community to provide protection, and they brought Roman thinking and Roman ways to the areas where they were established, and they had a great influence on colonies throughout the empire. For instance, we have in the next picture, we have in Paul's day, you had the capital there, and Augustus' army was able to influence this here. This is in Spain, but you have a great Roman influence there, and many soldiers retired there and were able to bring stability and protection and things to the areas of Spain where Rome was influential. The next emperor that we want to talk about is the Caesars. This is Tiberius. And Tiberius is mentioned in the scriptures. He became the ruler in 14 AD, and he lived until 37 AD. So, you know, he was the Roman emperor during most of the time of Jesus Christ. He was the stepson and adopted son of Augustus, and he was 56 years old when he began to rule. So he was an older man, but he was generally a good emperor and helped to bring stability to the Roman Empire during his time. The next ruler is interesting and important for various reasons, and there's the most important reason is because Herod was the one who rebuilt the temple of God. And as you look at the Gospels, you see that the temple is a focal point for much of what takes place in the Gospels, especially at the end of Christ's life. So Herod became ruler in 37 BC, and he ruled until about 3 BC, and he is the one who rebuilt the temple. The second temple, he did a magnificent job in building it, and I mean, put a lot of work and time into it, and it was a magnificent structure that Christ and the disciples were looking down on in Matthew chapter 24, as Christ is explaining what's going to take place in the future. So so you see the temple here, the Castle Antonia here, where you had the Roman guard. And This was a major construction project that took many years to accomplish, 46 years. So the area of the Temple Mount was doubled and surrounded by a retaining wall with gates. And you had the temple was raised and enlarged and faced with white stone. So what they did is they put white stone all over the temple complex, which would stand out. People would be able to see it, and it was an awesome sight. As you went up to Jerusalem, you would come upon this magnificent building, and it's where Christ went and where Christ was would preach. He went there at the age of 12. He went there and was able to interact with the people of his time, and it was a magnificent building, and Christ showed up at his temple as was predicted. Now, the next thing that we're going to end the study on is something called crucifixion, which is, you had the Romans, you see a Roman crucifixion here. This is from the film Spartacus. And once the Spartacus and the slave army was defeated, then they captured them and they killed them by placing them on the on crucifixes all along the road. So we couldn't imagine something like this taking place in our time, but the Romans didn't care. They were pretty bloodthirsty and could be pretty cruel. And this is an example of that. That they, if you rebelled against them, they came down hard and basically adopted a scorched earth policy in order to beat down any kind of rebellion. So as you think about crucifixion, it's important to, and you think about crucifixion and the fullness of time. So as you look at crucifixion, it probably originated with the Assyrians and the Babylonians. It was not something that the Romans adopted. They didn't create it, but it came their way, and they thought, this isn't actually a good way of executing prisoners in a way that's going to make a point. And so the Romans adopted crucifixion and perfected it, and they used it throughout their empire in order to put down rebellions and to emphasize to people, you don't mess with Rome. So crucifixion was not a method of execution established in the Bible. You don't find Israel or the Jews executing people by crucifixion. That was not something that they did. It was not a method used by the Jews, but it was a Roman form of persecution or execution. So and so as you look at this, so crucifixion is something that I wanted you to think about, because it's important to understand and helps us to understand more fully the fullness of the time. So as you think about the Messiah was prophesied to be crucified. He was prophesied to be crucified. Back in the time of David, it was said that the Christ would be crucified. Specifically, that's mentioned in Psalm 22, verses 14 through 18. Psalm 22, verses 14 through 18. And this is an accounting of Christ on the cross. And it says, Christ said, in verse 14, I am poured out like water, and all my bones are out of joint. My heart is like wax. It is melted within me. So being crucified is being described here by Jesus Christ. And we all know that Jesus went to his Father and say, is there another way? And the Father said, no, this is the way it has to be. And so Christ submitted his will to God and went through with it. Christ said in verse 15, my strength is dried up like a potsherd, and my tongue clings to my jaws. You have brought me to the dust of death. And he says in verse 16, for dogs have surrounded me. The congregation of the wicked has enclosed me. They pierced my hands and my feet. They did that very thing. They did pierce Christ's hands. They pierced his feet as they placed him on the cross. Christ said in verse 17, I can count all my bones. They look and stare at me. They divide my garments among them, and for my clothing they cast lots. And these very things took place as Christ hung on the cross and his life ebbed away. So execution by crucifixion could not take place. The Jews could not carry out such an execution. The Romans were the ones who had to make the decision on whether you could crucify somebody or not. They carried that out. So it was not possible until the Romans established their direct rule in the area of the Promised Land that crucifixion took place. It was not something that the Jews did. It wasn't even something that Herod did. But once the Romans came in and took over, then you began to have crucifixion. So this is this took place around that came into being when at the time of Herod's death, when crucifixion became more common. So let's think about something else in this regard. How did the Romans get control over Palestine? They didn't have control of it until around the time of Christ's birth, when Herod ruled on behalf of the Romans, but he was a client king, and it was left up to him how he ruled. But with Herod dying and conflict in the area of Palestine, the Romans said, we're not going to let this go, and they came in and they established a colony and a government. And as you look at the word Palestine, the Romans are the one who brought that particular name for the Holy Land into use. It's interesting here, the Kingdom of Judea was independent until 63 BC when it was conquered by the Roman general Pompey. And after the Romans made it a client state with kings who controlled domestic life, that's how Herod came into power. He was ruling for the Romans and answerable to them. Now, last slide. And this is the death penalty in Judea in the time of Christ. Let's look at, we're going to read Matthew 26, verse 1 and 26, verse 3. And it says, now it came to pass when Jesus had finished all these sayings that he said to his disciples, you know that after 2 days is the Passover, and the Son of Man will be delivered up to be crucified. So Jesus Christ knew he was to be crucified. He knew that. He knew that when he was a young man. He knew that throughout eternity, that he would be crucified. But if he had been born too early or too late, it's likely he wouldn't have been crucified. And you look at the what it says about the chief priest in Matthew chapter 26, verse 3. It says, then the chief priest, the scribes, and the elders of the people assembled. So these are the religious leaders in Judea. And they assembled at the palace of the high priest, who is called Caiaphas. And basically, as you go through the story in the Gospels, you find that the Jewish leadership was willing to do anything to condemn Jesus to death. But the problem was they could not execute Jesus. I don't think they had any qualms about doing it. But if they took that into their own hands, then they would have to deal with the Roman authorities. And it's interesting what Leon Morris in his book, The Gospel According to Matthew, has to say about this. He said, when the Romans conquered a territory, they normally left judicial matters in local hands. So when they conquered Judea, they basically left the responsibilities of going to court in the hands of the Jews. While the Romans allowed the conquered peoples a certain amount of latitude, the conquerors kept the death penalty in their own hands and reserved the right to take over any case at any stage. So the Romans reserved the right of execution to themselves. And they reserved the right at any time to intervene in a case if they did not like how things were going. And it was their right to make the decision on whether somebody would live or die. They were the ones who carried out the death penalty. Morris goes on to say, in the case of Jesus, the situation was complicated by the fact that the Jews saw Jesus as guilty of a religious crime, that is blasphemy. They saw him as a blasphemer, but that didn't carry any weight with the Romans. They didn't care about a religious crime. They didn't care that he was a blasphemer, because blasphemy wasn't going to overthrow the Caesar. But so what the Jewish authorities realized is, we can't kill him. We want him to be killed, but we're going to have to convince Pilate to execute him. So they had to induce Pilate to execute Jesus. And what they did is they came up with a crime that would cause the Roman governor to be able to authorize Christ to be executed by crucifixion. In what follows, Matthew shows us how the Jewish authorities came to condemn Jesus according to their own law, and then how they brought a charge before the Roman governor that was not their real grievance, but would induce Pilate to crucify Jesus, to point out that Jesus was a king, that he was exalting himself as a king, and that would be something that would push Pilate to actually execute Jesus. And actually, once Pilate examined Christ, he saw that Christ was not a threat. Christ may have incited the Jews to some extent, just by being Christ and preaching the truth and being seen as Christ, but Christ had no intention of establishing his kingdom in the time of Caiaphas and Pilate. But they convinced him of that, and so he went ahead and executed Jesus, as we well know from the story. But this could not have taken place except in the fullness of time. And as you look at multiple events that we've looked at through this study and in the sermon that I gave earlier this month, you see very clearly that the fullness of time is most applicable to God working out his great plan. And as you look at what's going on in the world today, you know, Christ is going to come a second time, and he's going to come in the fullness of time. We will see multiple scriptures that are fulfilled by the coming of Christ, and it will be clearly the time. The time is fulfilled, and God's plan is going to work out with his second coming, just as it did with his first coming. So I hope that you found this profitable, and I found it interesting. I've not ever thought about the fullness of time until this year, but there's always something new that you can learn in God's word, and hopefully you found it profitable.